All right, welcome guys. This is the first episode of Let's Talk Strategy. This is a fan-based podcast of FTD, not an officially sanctioned FTD podcast. Purpose of this podcast is to kind of discuss strategy and just, you know, kind of check in with GMs around the league. Our first GM is Brian of the Red Sox. How's it going, Brian?
I'm good. How you doing, Johnny?
Good, good. Yeah, I think it's fitting. You're the first guest. I think you were the first big rival I had in this league. We had many battles when I was with the Angels and you, the Red Sox. Yeah, so I guess we'll kind of start. I'm actually really curious about your team specifically because, you know, you've had so much success and I think, you know, you kind of had a down year and curious what your approach to the 24 season is, and you know, are you trying to contend? I know you're looking for major league talent, so just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, so the first season I was in this league, I lost the World Series in game 7 to the Cardinals, and then ended up winning the World Series the second season. Third season I lost to your Angels, I think, in the playoffs. And last year, I think Tyler may have done a podcast with a couple of guys and were saying that I kind of had the thought process that I was probably not going to be able to contend last year. And that's really kind of how I thought. If I did well, great. If not, I was going to break it down. And because I had some aging guys that I was looking to trade. And so this season, a couple of deals have popped up that I kind of jumped on to get Eloy Jimenez and Kyber Ruiz. And then literally just picked up today in our offseason sim, Tim Anderson at shortstop. So there's a couple of guys that I am working towards also through trade. So my thought is to contend this season. I don't think we're a World Series contender by any means. We're probably another year or so away. But I do think that my team will be around 500 hopefully this season.
Yeah, and I think you picked up Jimenez after I had kind of taken some notes on your team. So things are fluid over there, but yeah, we'll definitely get into some of the trades, you know, some of the less recent ones, some of the more recent ones. But okay. So yeah, you think you're going to contend, maybe not World Series berth, but definitely going to put up a fight. So yeah, I guess the next thing I wanted to talk about, and this is something I'm very curious just to ask, you know, any GM in this league. I think we all have wildly different strategies, and you know, some have different motivations, different objectives coming in, and different market sizes, all that kind of, all those factors. But whenever you like start a season, what is like the first thing you evaluate? Like, I think you said, you know, the podcast kind of made that podcast with some of those guys may have given you kind of a inclination that maybe you weren't going to contend, but just in your own evaluation, what is kind of the first thing you look at? Is it age, like you'd mentioned? And just kind of want to know your thought process around that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, what I try and do is I look at it from year to year and go, look, where are my guys at age wise? And where's my farm system with guys coming up? So I am going to give away maybe not too much of a secret, but maybe a little bit of what I look at. I think in out of the park baseball, your guy's main window of your player's main window of being really good is between the ages of 24 and 30. And then anything after 30, it's kind of a crapshoot. So your guy may completely fall off the map, or your guy may still be pretty good for a year or two.
Right.
But that's your, you know, and that's the same thing in real life. So you kind of got to look at that as your window of opportunity is kind of how I look at it. And last season, you know, I saw, look, I had guys that were getting older, Eduardo Rodriguez, JD Martinez, Ketel Marte. Those guys were getting older and my team just underperformed terribly through the first couple months. So it was like, okay, well, let me just see what I can get in the trade market, try and retool, and then kind of go from there. You know, when I'm evaluating my team, very much so, I'm looking at age and, you know, what I have as far as both hitting and pitching, but mostly age is like the big thing I'm looking at, because if I see that my team's struggling right off the bat and they're older in my really good position players, I'm definitely going to probably look at trying to trade them off if I can and get value.
Right. Yeah. And it's actually, it's kind of synonymous a little bit, I think, with the real life Red Sox right now. Where they, you know, they might sell off some talent, but they're not necessarily going like a full Marlins rebuild.
Yeah.
Right.
And I honestly thought after this past off season, I'm sorry, after this past season, I thought I was doing a full on rebuild. Like this was going to be maybe 3 years away. And look, it still might. But again, like I started off by telling you, my whole thing was like a couple guys kind of got onto the trade market. And, you know, Joey Fats will tell you, I reached out to him a bunch of times about his hitters. And then Eloy, he said, look, I'll trade you Eloy, but you got to give up one of your top pitchers. Mm-hmm. And then Ruiz, you know, Tampa Bay is surprisingly kind of going through a rebuild of their own.
Right.
And Ruiz became available. So I was like, all right, well, maybe I can speed this up a little bit. And I was kind of planning on this season not being one where I would compete. But now I'm thinking a little bit otherwise.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a good segue. We'll go into some of the moves you made. You kind of touched on some already. But yeah, I mean, you had a lot of, just looking back through some of the deals you made, I was like, wow, there was a lot of talent on that team, and then a lot of talent, you know, coming to that team in some of the deals you made. But like you mentioned, like Ketel Marte and Alex Verdugo, you traded to me, Eduardo Rodriguez, JD Martinez. So I think kind of, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of what your main strategy at the moment is like, you know, maybe you are kind of on a track toward a rebuild, but you're sort of looking to retool a little bit, where you're replacing some of that aging, still good talent, with some younger guys. And yeah, I am curious, maybe I'm biased, 'cause you know, he was traded to my team, but, Verdugo, you know, in terms of, you know, that strategy of kind of moving aging guys, I'm curious what the motivation was there. I mean, I know he was certainly approaching payday, but you know, he was 26 or 27. Curious what the motivation was to move him specifically.
Yeah, so Verdugo, and you just joined the league that I run, SAHL. I've had him on the Phillies for like the last, I think, 4 years. And he's been a very consistent hitter. The problem with Verdugo is his intangibles are not good. You know, he's in my league, he became somewhat disruptive, wanted to trade a couple times and stuff like that. And he's serviceable in the outfield. He's not a great fielder. He's okay. He's a very good hitter. He obviously performed very well for you after I traded him to you. Way better than he did for me when he was with the Red Sox this past year. So Verdugo was one of those guys that I was like, look, I know that I can get some value for him. And because he is, like you said, he's still fairly young. He's a very good hitter. He can play defense. He hasn't gone downhill as far as his intangibles in this league. So that's good. And, you know, I got a few good guys for him that I liked in return, and Smith, Villers, and Reese Albert. And to be honest, I've said this before in a couple other podcasts I've done. There's sometimes guys that I just try and get you to include in a trade that I may not love, but I just need pieces, you know, like the Ruiz trade, the Kybert Ruiz trade. I ended up trading off a couple of guys that I do like, but I know that I have depth because of guys that I made in other trades that I don't necessarily love, but you know, their ratings are still okay, and they're pretty high sometimes on the prospect rankings. So I know I can maybe swap those guys out. And that's my whole thing is when I'm making trades, it's very rare. You know, my most recent trade was Eloy straight up for Justin Dunn. But it's very rare that I make a trade where it's just like one for one. I'm usually trying to get back a couple other pieces where I can maybe ship off a couple other guys. And the other trades that I made last year, like Marte, I got back a guy in Hudson Potts who was not very good when he got to my major league roster. But there was another guy, Emilio Valencia, who I got back, who I do like, who's 21, and he's moving up my prospect list. Same thing when I traded Eduardo Rodriguez and JD Martinez. A bunch of the guys that I got back in those deals are either moving up in the prospect rankings, or a couple of the guys have actually came in because my team was so bad at the end of last season that they actually performed pretty well. So I'm actually pretty happy with it, with doing that kind of those kind of trades.
Yeah, it's Verdugo in LA is like the opposite of Ozuna. He Verdugo comes in and lights it up.
Yep.
I had to give a shout out to Ozuna for Nick. It wouldn't be a podcast without that. Well, you definitely got some. You didn't get scrubs for Verdugo. You got Noah Smith and Villers and Albert, like you mentioned. And you know, Noah Smith, I think, does well in pretty much every sim you could. You know, 99 out of 100 sims, he's definitely, you know, a very talented defender and can hit too. So, I was just particularly interested in that Verdugo deal. And yeah, just looking over your farm system, just in the pipeline, you know, I think pretty much since the FTD started, you've always had kind of the same depth that you were talking about. You know, it's like, you might not have 5, 10, you know, top 100 guys, but you certainly have like, you know, at least 4 or 5 guys at every, you know, every additional like kind of tier, whether, you know, top 200, top 300, top 400, top 500. So, I can definitely see what you're talking about with kind of just having some depth and just, you know, we won't talk about the Bogarts and Simmons deal in which I definitely got robbed. And then, well, I thought so. And then I won a World Series and Bogarts was a huge part of that. So I think that actually did balance out. But I remember when I dealt you Bogarts, or I mean, when I dealt you Simmons, it was, you were kind of looking for some depth and not just like the headliners. So
that trade negotiation took a while. I don't know if you remember. I remember it because it was probably in real life, like maybe like 8 months ago. And I remember, because you're on the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm on the East Coast. So I was like in bed, like about to fall asleep next to my wife. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to make. And at one point, I think we were talking about, I was trying to get back from you. Who's the really good outfielder prospect they have? The Angels. I'm trying to think of his name now. Oh, I can't think of it.
Angels.
Anyway, no, there's another guy I was trying to think of that I kept trying to get you to involve, and you were like, nah, I can't make that move with him in it. Joe Adell. That's who it was. Joe Adell. Oh,
yeah, right.
Yeah. And you backed off of it, and then we were like going back and forth, and that deal took a while. And I was like, all right, you know, I ended up getting Simmons, and I've talked about it in a podcast I think I did with Zach on here, FDD podcast. That deal ended up being the reason I think I ended up winning the World Series the one season, because he's so good defensively. Simmons is at shortstop.
Yeah.
That he helps out the rest of your staff like ridiculously. And in another league, the other league that I run, SAHL, I kind of took that mindset and did the same thing with Chapman and put him at third base or shortstop. That's one of, I think, the underrated. I know that one of the reasons you want to do this podcast is kind of get an insight, and I don't want to give everybody else in the league insight on exactly my thought process, but whatever, it's fine, you know, like
listening, they don't know,
nobody gives a shit. but I honestly I think that one of the things that goes sometimes, and I'm only saying this now because a year ago is when I really got into online leagues with Out of the Park. I used to just play just normal at home leagues. And then I got into, once COVID hit, I really got into online leagues, and I got a lesson in it from other guys that clearly had done it well before I did. And I was trading for guys that either had bad personalities or had shitty contracts or couldn't play defense. And the game is really, really good at that. Knowing that, hey, you need to have guys that can play defense. You need to be able to manage your budget depending on how big or small it is. And then you also need to be able to manage personalities on your team. So, there's all different things that go into it. And on a different note, as far as the trade you make, like, I've had a couple of guys reach out to me recently and say, you know, you've got like four really good prospect shortstops. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And I do. And I had one guy literally just text me or message me right before we got on here and say, dude, you just took Tim Anderson, who I was trying to get to play shortstop. You've got fucking four guys in your farm system that can come up and play shortstop probably within the next year.
Right.
But again, that's the way I look at it, is if I can get a Tim Anderson and he can play shortstop or second, I'll move one of those guys to short or second, and then I'll trade one or two of them and try and get pieces back where I can, you know, benefit myself in other areas. So,
right. Yeah. So you're just hoarding all of the league shortstops at this point.
That's correct. Yeah. As many as I can.
Right. Yeah. No, it's funny. Just talking about that Bogarts deal, I feel like there could be an entire podcast where people just reflect on like how trades have panned out and whatnot. You know, you could talk about that for hours, because
we're in SAHL in my other league. We're in 2027. So that's our eighth season now in almost a year of real life. And I said that same type of thing, even on the flip side of it. If you could do a podcast of trades you almost made with like certain guys, like there's certain guys in that league, and same thing with this league, you know, that are very active, and you know that they're always reaching out to look at making trades. And if you could even just do one where you're like, dude, I almost traded away this guy, or I almost traded for this guy. Yeah, you could absolutely have like a podcast that would last hours on that shit, because there's so many. I mean, I've been in so many conversations with guys in this league, the one that just pops off the top of my head was with Newman from the Reds. Like, I've been in so many conversations where he's put up guys, and I've been like, all right, are you really trading this guy? And then he sends me an offer and I go, you're not really trading this guy. Like you're just floating him out there to see if you can get someone to overpay. But then I think about it a little bit and I'm like, would I overpay for this guy? Maybe, you know, and those are those trades where you're like, I might actually do it. And you come almost close to doing it. But in the end, you end up either not doing it or you end up, you know, pivoting somewhere else.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some guys in the league that operate that way where, yeah, it's like they kind of put something out and then you're like, oh, no way, I'm not doing that. And then you kind of look at it a little bit like, maybe I will consider that.
Yeah, you double think yourself a little bit because you're like, I mean, I really do. You know, how many leagues are you in, Johnny?
Right now I'm in two.
Okay. So you're in this one and the league I run.
Yeah.
And you were in, obviously, TLG, which you ran, the league. You know, it's also very hard to differentiate between one league and the other if it's, you know, a real Major League Baseball league. I'm in one other league where it's pretty much almost all fictional guys. But you get kind of caught up in the names that did, like, yeah. I know right now I got caught up on Eloy Jimenez in the league I run was like the fucking MVP. I don't think he was the MVP. He was close to being the MVP one season. He won two championships with the White Sox and I got caught up in it. So sometimes you get like caught up in that too. You're like, but like you were saying earlier, like Noah Smith does great in every league you've been in, you know, you kind of get like caught up if you're in multiple leagues. You're like, oh, this guy, he's going to end up being great in this league, so I got to go out and get him. But he may not, and that's the beauty, I think, of the game itself is that it's very random for the most part. You know, there's always going to be guys that are really good, like Mike Trout and stuff like that. You know, those type of guys. But the guys that are younger that are developing, they may or may not end up being really good.
Yeah, no, it's certainly the game is unique in that in one sim, Cedric Mullins can be like a legit 5-tool like star, and then in another sim can barely, you know, he'll get. I think in TLG he got released because he was just awful.
Yeah.
So the TCR, that's what it comes at you quick.
That's what I love about the game. You know, I. There's guys in other leagues I've been in that complain about, you know, certain parts of this game. You have to realize it is a game and it's not real life. So it is amazing, though, how well they mimic real life. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be issues, I think, that happen. You know, especially if you do live games, you're going to see stuff. People get so pissed off sometimes and you know, you and I have been in the playoffs a lot, so we've been in live games in this league where guys run through the frickin' wall and then there's like three straight wild pitches that happen and shit like that. And you're just like, what the hell, man? This game is bullshit. Like, this would never happen in real life. But so what? Like, it's a game. Like, we're all having fun playing it. This one happens to be a money league. It's not a huge money league, but to be able to realize like all the intricacies of this game, if you compare it to like other games that sports games that maybe other guys play, and you know, I don't really play Madden anymore or anything like that, but the intricacies of how they have everything kind of tied in together with ratings and you know, players getting along and managers and how you set your strategies and stuff. It is really cool, and to me, it makes it so much more fun. So,
yeah, well, and I think sometimes too, you know, we watch the live sims of the playoffs, and you know, you see three pass balls or whatever, and you might think there's no way that happens, but I actually think, you know, thinking back on some playoff games, like shit gets wild sometimes. You know, in real life play, I mean, like I think we kind of get lulled into this kind of like calmness of the regular season and the dog days of that, but there are some playoff games where just like, you know, like freaking what was that game where Soto took the lead 3-2 against the Brewers, that wild card game, right? Like
Yeah.
that was insane. Like that whole sequence of everything that led up to, I mean, that whole run of that playoff series was, or playoff run for the Nationals was just like OOTP moments, one after the other. Howie
Yeah.
Kendrick grand slam off of Joe Kelly. Then, I mean, that whole thing. So
the one that I always remember, that reminds me of guys complaining, going, how the hell are they taking my pitcher out already in the fifth or sixth inning?
Yeah.
And you got Blake Snell,
right,
which happened in the World Series last year. And you're like, okay, like it happens. Like, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying the game is obviously like real life. There's certain situations where you're just like, okay, obviously this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But the game is as complex and as impressive as any game I've ever played, and that's why like I'm so immersed in it and love doing it every day. And my wife looks at me and is like, are you ever gonna get fucking tired of playing this? Like, and she goes, what are you doing? You're just looking at players and constantly like moving one, like I'm in the roster screen, you know, and I'm like moving one from, you know, double A to triple A to major league roster to DFA, and she's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
but I love it. I mean, that's the intricacy of the game and the fun of it.
Yeah, you should have seen my girlfriend today when I was testing out the podcast software with her just to make sure it was working on my end. And she was like, what are you doing? You're making a podcast? I was like, oh, yeah, you know, just for my baseball, you know, league that I'm in. And she just was laughing so much. She was like, you are such a dork. I was like, hey. I'm like, I'm not like doing a public like NPR podcast. It's just, you know, but yeah, she gave me a healthy roast for that. So I got brought down to earth pretty quick. But
they'll sit there and watch the Real Housewives of, you know, whatever for like hours on end, or like this mindless shit. And it's the same thing for us. It's just, you know, what guys or people that are into sports love doing. So it's, you know, it's whatever you choose that, you know, intrigues you at that point. So yeah, they can laugh and we can go, you know, what you're watching is stupid and what I'm doing is stupid, but hey, it enjoys us. We enjoy it and it passes the time. So
yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that's all very true. And I almost want, I should just say like, well, by the way, this podcast is sponsored by OOTP just based on how much we are gassing it up. But
yeah,
I agree. It's very complex and it takes into account a lot of really intricate things. And it's not, it's certainly not something you can find in every game. Cool. So we'll go on to the next thing. I just want to say too, Luke Leto is going to be, that's another shortstop you have. It's like, I was trying to find an infield, you know, defensive elite infield defensive player on the market, and it was slim pickings. I was just kind of looking through systems, and God, Leto and Smith both are ridiculous. And like you said, you know, they could be moved around the infield. They could be pretty much anywhere. So they will either be Red Sox or they will help someone else. Those are definitely some names to be watching out for. Cool. So I guess good segue. We'll kind of go to the next thing, and then I'll get back to your trade block. But of those prospects that you've acquired or ones that you already have or already had, who would you say, if it's one guy or maybe a couple, that you're absolutely the most excited about? Like, you know, whether they make the debut on your team or just excited about their talent in general.
I would definitely say, in the next couple of years, Noah Smith, if he ends up staying on my team, he could be a guy that probably I would move in order to get back a pretty good piece if I'm competitive this year or the next year. I really like Jordan Lawler. He's another guy that's a shortstop that, you know, could either play short or second, but he's got the range to be able to play short. I really like those two guys. Chase Davis is a guy that I got back in a deal when I traded JD Martinez that was one of the few ones where I did just trade straight up. The JD Martinez trade market had somewhat dried up at one point. But I'm pretty sure if I remember right, he played pretty well for Minnesota at one point. Not one point, but last year during the second half.
Yeah.
But Chase Davis is a guy that I really do like. He's performed in a couple leagues I've been in. So he's another guy I really like. My Corbin Carroll is another guy in my outfield mm-hmm. heat. I broke him into the major leagues last year kind of quickly, maybe more quick than I thought I would. And he performed really well.
Yeah, he's, he did.
yeah. I mean, the guy's never going to hit for power. He's not a power hitter, but he's a very good defensive outfielder. He ended up hitting over 300 when he came up for me. Is very good at stealing bases, good base runner. I'm never about tanking, but my team obviously was not good last season. I wasn't trying to tank, but I've, and this is maybe an insight for guys that listen to this. There's certain things that I try and keep up on the message boards, and whether this is true or not, but the OOTP message boards, the developers write a lot of stuff on there. So mm-hmm. if you're not on there, you should check it out because they do write some good stuff. Like I saw guys that would in spring training sit their main players. They will tell, there was an article I saw written by one of the developers who said, it's a terrible idea because we factor in rust into the game. So
right.
if you have a guy that hasn't done anything in spring training and then you throw him out there, like especially established veterans, and you didn't throw him at all, like you were just like, all right, you know, I'm going to have Chris Sale just completely sit on my bench or, because I'm worried about him getting injured, you know, mm-hmm. in the preseason and spring training. That's why I was kind of like concerned. I was like, oh my God, I'm starting to win too many games. And I'm trying to somewhat be in the possibility of, you know, getting one of the top picks because we did a lottery in this league.
Right.
But Corbin Carroll was one of those guys that was really good. There's a, honestly, I'm looking at it right now. I've got 25 of the top 500 prospects. I only have two in the top 100 right now. Leto would have been there. I screwed up on Leto. At one point, I was letting the computer do my minors, mm-hmm. and I kind of screwed up, and he got shot down to a high A ball, and he should have been in Triple A still, so he's lost his prospect status. But those are my main guys, are my shortstops. I've got four or five shortstops that I really like, but I'm hoping that maybe some of my pitchers too that I brought in, Derek Diamond's one guy, Ian Villers, who I got from you, is another guy that I'm kind of hoping on. Those are my main guys. I really do like a bunch of the prospects I have.
Well, it's simply impossible for me to give away too much in a trade, so there's no way Villers is talented because I am just impeccable at talent evaluation. He's gonna be good for sure. You have the rangiest farm system in all of baseball. I mean, you could have it's crazy. You got Smith, Lawler, Garcia, it's Leto, it's just nuts. So it'll be interesting to see which shortstop you end up going with in the future, and if one of those guys moves around or whatnot. But definitely some interesting names coming up. And then, without giving too much insight into your thought process, I don't want to make you give away any upper hand or anything you might feel in some of these guys, but I am curious. There are some interesting names on your trade block, and I think it kind of, as you mentioned, it kind of goes with your strategy, right? They're kind of aging, but there's still some good talent there, and guys like Andrew Heaney and Robbie Ray, and So I'm curious what kind of return you're sort of looking for, and I'm sure you've had discussions already, but is there like a, I know not everyone just bases their haul that they're hoping for on the prospect rankings, because sometimes the rankings can be totally off and misrepresent how good or how bad someone is. But is what's kind of your outlook there? Are you just trying to, is there like a position you're trying to fill, or are you trying to get major league talent more for those guys? Just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so when I put out the Haney, Ray, Houck, those type of guys, some of my guys that are established, pitchers in the league, my thought process was at that point, I was still trying to figure out if I was going to somewhat compete this year or still look to move them to get more prospects and continue the 2 or 3 year rebuild. Now that I've gotten a couple guys that I like in trades back, Haney and Ray are still available, but my thought process is that those are guys that I, like I said when we started this podcast, that I still think I'm probably about a year or two away. So Haney or Ray are guys that, and Houck are three guys that can definitely help contenders. Real contenders. I don't consider myself that at all with this team right now. So those are guys that, Haney helped win me a championship. Ray is an excellent pitcher, and if his Ray's ratings would be amazing in a park like a Seattle or a San Francisco, a park that, or San Diego, a team that has a stadium that allows for them to really not get shelled per se, so those guys, my thought process is, hey, let me just throw it out there so that other guys in the league can say, hey, I'm willing to trade these guys. If you need starting pitching, I've got a few guys, and I'm willing to take back prospects or whatever. If that helps you out, it'll obviously help me out and the prospects or younger guys so that I can, again, be better set up to make a run in a year or two.
Yeah, and I guess, worst case scenario, if it does happen that you can't find a partner for the talent you think they have, it's like, yeah, they're getting a little bit older, but those two might, Heaney and Ray specifically, might be able to, help you out in a year or so if you were to keep them. So it's like, the floor is pretty high in this case, I think, in terms of the possible outcomes.
Yeah,
But
and my thought is with those guys, it's always to me, it's always beneficial to throw out names so that they're on people's mind a little bit to say, if Haney or Ray have three or four really good starts and I'm sitting at 500, but you're, 10 games over, 20 games over, and you're like, I need another starting pitcher. You're like, oh yeah, I saw that Ray had a few good starts, and maybe I should reach out to Brian and see if he's interested in moving that dude. And I could trade away maybe one or two of my prospects that I really don't need, and I'm going to try to win a World Series. I mean, that's really how I ended up winning my World Series is obviously pure luck at some point, but also, I made some good moves that season and brought in a couple guys like a Haney or other guys that I brought in that year and was like, okay, this ended up working out for me. I ended up signing a couple guys that off season, and first baseman Robert Ramos, who was like an independent league guy, and then or independent or one of the international guys, and then there was Ishikawa, who was a Japanese guy that I picked up. So it's like always just, to me, it's always just having the versatility to try and add guys at the deadline. And that's what'll help you, I think, you know, make it further in the playoffs and stuff like that. So for me, throwing those guys out, it's not necessarily that I want to trade them, but I'm just saying to guys, hey, those guys are available if you're looking for starting pitching or the other guys that I have available, because I'll be willing to move them because I don't think I'm ready just yet to make a playoff run.
Yeah, and I think the starting pitching market is quite diluted at the moment with free agency and whatnot. So maybe, you know, as more guys sign and some teams are missing out on some of their targets, maybe the talks for guys like Heaney and Ray will start to heat up as the offseason progresses. Because, yeah, I mean, just the whole free agent class is absolutely nuts in terms of the depth. I swear, like every even the catcher position, which is like such a shallow position, you know, it's like it's pretty crazy right now. So yeah, I'm interested to see what happens there. All right, so the last couple things before we wrap up is some predictions. I know you like to do some predictions in your league, so I'm curious. Obviously it's kind of a weird time to predict given the time in the off season and whatnot that we're at. But, if you were to predict the final standings of your division, for the end of the 2024 season, I'm curious who you think, goes first through last and, you know, interested, I don't know if you've seen that one meme that's been going around, like when the what is it, the AL West, it spells asshat right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
I saw
that'll be the term that I you know, it's going to be the token term now for this is what is the asshat prediction for your division? But yeah, I'm just curious what you think on that.
I honestly have no idea how to predict our division. And I don't mean to be rude on this one. I think Baltimore will probably finish last. I think that my team will probably finish around third. Tampa Bay's taken and I'm not doing it in the proper order here, but Tampa Bay's taken somewhat of a step back here. And that might be, my guess is that he decided, you know, as far as money wise, he needed to maybe trade off some of his pieces, because I thought Tampa Bay was in line to their team was stacked to be able to win a World Series. It just didn't happen this past year. So if I had to do it, I'll start from top to bottom properly. Toronto, Tampa, Red Sox, Yankees, Orioles.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense to me. Definitely with the Rays taking a step back, you know, I think kind of maybe mirroring what the real life organization does is, you know, they have talent, and then when payday starts looming, they're very good at flipping it for young talent. And I think that's kind of the model that's being followed there. So yeah, it would be pretty, I think Toronto certainly has a shot. It'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do with their new GM. And then, yeah, you know, I think the Orioles kind of represent that block of teams that is rapidly approaching on the horizon that, you know, Zach kind of alludes to, but they're all terrifying. The Orioles, the Pirates, you know, I've been the Angels and the Dodgers, like, tough going there, taking over those teams, right? But yeah, it'll be sort of the time where these farm systems start to make the majors, and we'll all be in the, you know, in a fight to the death, it seems like. But
it's going to be an interesting division, I think, this season, for sure, because you know, Tampa Bay, like we said, Ruiz, I traded for. Trey Turner, he's still actively shopping. Austin Meadows went to Atlanta. Brent Honeywell went to Atlanta. You know, that was a huge trade in our league. so, I mean, Tampa Bay, just at the thought of losing Ruiz, probably Trey Turner is going to go. Austin Meadows is gone. Brent Honeywell is gone. You know, they have to take a step back. So they have to knock off at least 10 games from what they won last year. So they'll probably be around 90 wins. Toronto is a very good team. So, you know, with Bichette, Guerrero, you know, they just need to get some more pitching. You know, Pearson's obviously very good, but if they can get more pitching, and with Tampa Bay taking a step back, obviously that helps them with more wins. So, but then the next three teams, myself included, and the Yankees and the Orioles, it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. But I think it'll be a fun division race to watch for most of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, I totally forgot the Yankees got Berrios, so that was a very important positional acquisition for them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But
I mean, they've got Cole Berrios at the top of their rotation, and in a lot of leagues, Davey Garcia ends up becoming a really good pitcher, so they could have a 1-2-3 starting pitching staff. They've just lost Severino to the Astros, but that's okay. I mean, Severino to me is almost more of a relief pitcher at some point.
Right.
But their starting staff is really impressive, and they still have Torres. You know, they've got Aaron Judge. Andujar is a really good player. The Yankees are a good team. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure, Johnny.
Yeah, and we'll certainly, I'll make sure to show the receipts when it's the end of the season, and we'll see if your prediction matches up. So one final, completely way too early prediction based on, you know, the data that we have now, the information that we have now. If you were to
hold this against me, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, perfect.
Yeah, it's totally unfair to ask, but we'll still hold it against you. What is your prediction, your total stab in the dark prediction for who will make the World Series and then who will win the World Series?
Okay, so, and this has been talked about a couple times in the podcast, and I have been dumbfounded at how Cleveland has not won a World Series in this league. Shane's done a really good job with that team.
Yeah.
So my prediction will be, and again, as you stated and prefaced, the very early prediction, because he does have a few guys out there that would definitely change my thought process if he moves them, especially Ramirez, would be Cleveland and Atlanta in the World Series. And I will take Atlanta. Zach pulled off a masterful trade with Tampa. His team was already dominant. And obviously, look, Colorado's the defending champs. Hayden does a great job with them. They are a stacked team as well. But if you ask me today, which you are, I would say Cleveland and Atlanta, and give me Atlanta as the champions this early.
That's certainly a fair prediction. Don't forget, though, that I made the Angels, even not as their GM, I made them significantly better. So, you know, with giving them Seager, Kirilloff, Dustin May. So I'm they're still, you know, they're sneaky. I mean, they were sneaky in this, you know, year's run, too. I did not expect them to make the World Series, but I think Cleveland versus Atlanta is certainly a very valid prediction. Too early to predict prediction, but cool. Well, that's all I've got. So yeah, man, it was good chatting, and thanks for taking the time. I look forward to seeing what you do with the Red Sox, and hopefully, I think the league is better when they are World Series contenders. And you know, but I mean, you and I played in a World Series in another, in TLG. So maybe it's just destiny that no matter what league or what teams we run, we will meet again.
I didn't need you to bring that up because some people may not know that you ended up beating me in the World Series in that league. But
yeah,
yes, it's our battles have been extremely fun. You are you're a fun person to play against, where it's it's enjoyable when we're like writing back to each other, you know, on the message boards or whatever, saying like, oh shit, man, like, you know, this happened or that was great game or whatever. It's been very fun. And, I wish you the worst of luck with your team this year, but you're in a very, very tough division. Probably the toughest division in our league by far, actually, I would say. But I'm looking forward to the rest of the off season and a good season. I really enjoy this league. I think, me being a commission in another league, it would be wrong for me not to say that I think Zach does an amazing job in this league. It's not easy to have to deal with a bunch of bullshit on top of but even on top of the BS, you know, we wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun. But there's also a lot of other stuff. You know, he does a great job with doing articles, and then on top of that, running finances for us because it is a money league. So, you know, hats off to him and thank you for doing it, because it really is a fun league, and it's a group of guys that I enjoy being in a league in.
Yeah, no, I think you and I both, as having experience with being commissioner, know how annoying and stressful it can be at times. And especially, just managing a bunch of people in any setting, you know, whether it's a job or online league, it can be tricky. So I totally agree. Zach has done a masterful job.
I don't think people realize that, you know, it's one thing to be a manager of five or six people, but then, you know, in a fantasy type league where you're managing 29 other people, and, you know, people don't realize too, it's like, you know, when you're at work, they can see when somebody keeps coming up to you and just, you know, bothering you or constantly talking to you. But people don't see it in these leagues where it's like, dude, some guy is writing me after every goddamn sim to like to ask about this, or he's got a question about that, and it's no problem with certain stuff, but it's like, dude, leave me alone. Like, it's just a fun league. Like, we're just trying to enjoy ourselves. And it is a labor of love, I always said, but it is tough sometimes to be the commissioner, because you're like, dude, will you just leave me the hell alone? Like, I'm just trying to enjoy myself.
Now you know why I stepped down from my league, because, bro, it was annoying. I mean, Zach has immense patience that I just do not have in any bone in my body, but. I totally agree. It's there's a lot of needling that happens, and you know, you're trying to keep 30 people happy, and there's a lot of that. So
but obviously this is a very good league, because you wanted to have two different, for the most part, two different podcasts now. You know, in my league we have like multiple podcasts, we write articles like we do in this league. And that's a testament to him and to the other guys that are in the league. Yeah. So it is a lot of fun, and that's what makes it enjoyable, because, you know, I've said this several times on the podcast I do for my league. If nobody commented or nobody wrote articles or nobody was into the Sims, then you might as well just run your own home Sim where you just do it by yourself and you're not playing against anybody, because what's the sense in it? So it is, you know, doing these type of podcasts and having fun and bullshitting about the league. And honestly, knowing about like different teams and different players and the movement in the league and stuff makes it fun, because again, there's leagues I've been in and I'm just like, I don't know who's on what team or what's going on. Like it's because there's just no interest, but Again, that's a testament to Zach and the other guys in this league. I read those articles that you put up. I read the articles that Jonathan puts up or that, you know, Bambini puts up, you know, that gets me intrigued in the league. It makes me want to like delve even further into it. So it's been really fun.
Gotta justify my moves somehow. And there's no better way than to flame mail a post on that blog. So,
that's the only way you can. I mean, your moves are terrible.
Yeah, no, well, that's well established at this point. So, that'll be the next podcast. We'll just talk about how terrible I am at this. But cool, man. Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, man.
We will see each other in the playoffs soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Johnny.
All right, man. Have a great rest of your night.
You too, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.